The University Tower chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with the University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my left, from the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry, it's Professor Danielle Maxwell.
It's good to be here for the last episode of the season.
Unbelievable. Frankly, I'm like looking at you and our new physicist, and I'm going, you almost survived your first year in academia.
Yes.
Getting close.
And I'm ending it early by going to Abu Dhabi during exam week.
Oh my gosh. Professor Beth Oljar is here from the Department of Philosophy.
I am.
I want to say that during exam week, you might be taking a vacation in lovely Ferndale.
Come on, let's go, Sam.
No. So say, what's your analogous Abu Dhabi here? Possibly Ferndale. Have you been to Sam's this season yet? Come on.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, we get takeout from there quite a bit.
Okay.
No, I'll just be home. Sure. I mean, I'm teaching two classes, summer one and
one
in summer two.
So
yeah,
three summer courses.
Wow. Yeah.
Are you kidding? The money is too
money is
good,
good.
To pass
the money
up.
Is
my retirement plan. You understand is death. Basically, so yeah. When I die, I'll be free of UDM. That's
yes.
That's my plan.
Yes.
Professor Dan Maggio is here of the FIRST organization. How's everything going in FIRST?
Good. We have our world championship next week, so I'll be in Houston, Texas.
Oh, awesome. World championships. Oh, my gosh.
That's exciting.
I'll put in easily 15,000 steps a day.
Yeah, I bet you will.
It'll be good.
It's going to be exciting. Professor Jim Tubbs is also here, Department of Retired.
Hello, hello.
But not really, as we heard about in the last show. It's retirement is truly a state of mind.
Well, yeah.
Keep telling yourself that, Matt.
Yeah, you're retired right now. It's a state
of
mind.
Oh, I'm retired?
It's a state of mind.
I'm living in an alternate reality here, huh?
What is retirement, right?
Yes, what is retirement?
Is retirement?
A philosophical question.
Professor Dave Chow is here.
Pleasure to be here.
And what's going on in our neighborhood that I need to know about?
Nothing.
Oh, okay.
My backyard is going to be a flurry of activity before long, so.
Can't wait.
Oh, joy.
Wait.
Vegetative activity.
Yes.
Vegetative.
Awesome.
What's new this year for Marcy?
She's got this brand new growing medium, new technique. Everything is sprouting up. Like, we're talking like tomatoes inside the house are like 6-7 inches tall.
Oh, my gosh.
We've got more lights going on. We're like the Las Vegas Strip in the back room right now. So.
And she grew everything from seed.
Yes.
Wow. That's incredible. Professor Stephen Manning, also from the Department of Retired, is here. You said you were working on a tomatilla sauce?
Yes.
Okay, like
for
today.
Smoked chicken enchiladas.
Oh, nice.
Yummy.
That sounds great.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
So right. Some sort of a salsa verde, if you will.
Correct.
Got it.
Yes, a lot of tomatillos.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Nice and tangy.
Yeah, did you like char them on your grill or something?
The recipe did not call for that. Okay. I thought they might. There is a poblano and a jalapeno. Delicious.
Let's not get Stephen charring again. Remember last summer when there was that smog alert that you were... possibly offending the neighbors?
Oh, with the big green egg, yeah. Well, the big green egg is not uncovered yet.
Oh,
I'm tempted.
Not
I may cook
yet.
Out, but not on that tomorrow night because it's supposed to be
you're
the
scourge
the
of the neighborhood, right?
Oh my gosh!
So,
we look forward to hearing more of your travails. Professor Heather Hill is here. What's something that Stephen has made in the green thing that's like really, really good?
Well, you know, he just grills salmon on there, and that's perfect.
Salmon,
ooh, yeah. You can never go wrong with salmon. Never. Yep.
And if we can ever get Copper River salmon, which we occasionally can get, which, it's only available a certain... It's just delicious.
Sure.
Where's the Copper River?
Alaska.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It takes it all.
Wow.
Kenai Peninsula.
The season is approaching. It's actually spring, depending on the run. Every year, when they first get it in, it's like... It has been in the past, like 35 a pound.
Wow.
Next week is like $29.99 a pound. And you keep waiting.
See.
And I'm reluctant to buy it when it's the cheapest. I mean, that's what I want to buy it. But you say, well, I'll give one more week, I'll give it. And then you go back the next week.
It's gone.
It's gone.
Oh, the worst feeling
now
ever.
Now it's down to tuna.
And I asked the guy. I know the guy. Alex is the fish guy.
Sure.
Alex the fish guy.
And I say.
The monger.
How many more weeks? Right. He never knows. But if I knew this was the lowest it's going to be, I might buy some and, fillet
it.
Just
do
it.
Just
do
it.
But it has such a beautiful color flash.
Absolutely.
But no, I mean, almost. He makes everything is really good.
Isn't farm-raised salmon just annoying? It's like.
Well,
it's so clearly not real salmon. And yeah, I don't even like salmon, and I don't think it's real salmon.
I'll still eat it because I like salmon.
No, I eat it, and it's pretty good. We got to doctor it up and stuff, but it's not like the wild stuff.
We're doing the thing where we always go back to food at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
My stomach literally is doing somersaults, so what I'm going to do is say that this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything.
Food.
It's been a while since we've had some food questions, you know. Stump the panel, you win a prize. You don't stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send us the questions in a number of ways. Email us at atp@udmercy.edu. Find us on Facebook and Instagram, or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy.
Can you pass the cupcakes, please?
Yes. Not the mic.
Oh, no,
oh,
the frosting on the mic.
Ask the Professor panelists. You have before you a challenging set of questions on the theme of American pop culture. Have fun with these.
Oh, no Canadian, huh?
According to tradition, who was the first person to utter the F word in a major studio film? And we'll do the person, the character, the name of the movie, or the year. I mean, there's a lot of details here. Not Richard Pryor.
Groucho Marx.
Not Groucho Marx, no.
Was it scripted that way, or
it seems a little esoteric. I'm not sure that any of you will
TV
have heard
was
of this film.
Grace Slick. I know that.
I think I remember hearing that. Yeah.
There's a great scene about that in a film called Pirate Radio. It's one of my
favorites. Yeah, I remember that movie.
So is it a musician or an actor? Would you say
it's an actress? Yes.
Actress.
Mae West?
It was not Mae West. That's a great guess.
Betty Davis.
Very good.
Lucille Ball.
How about we go for the year, because I'm pretty sure that's the best that I can do. What year do you think that happened?
57.
It was later than that.
Oh.
72.
It was earlier than
66.
That. 66. It was 67, 1967. Right. The name of the film was I'll Never Forget What's His Name. The actress was Marianne Faithfull. So there we go.
Oh, the singer.
Yeah, she's the singer.
There we go.
Okay.
Really? Somebody else must have dropped the F-bomb before that.
That's what it says here.
I don't like it.
Yeah. Quincy Jones, the super producer, died at 91, of course, in 2024.
Yes.
At 28 career Grammys. Did anybody have more than that?
No.
John Williams?
Grammys?
Grammys.
I'm thinking John Williams would be the closest, I think.
So for the record, it does not mention John Williams here.
Oh. Well, John, he's still kicking, so.
That is true. That is a true statement. Mm-hmm. A very, very popular female solo artist of the last 20 years has 32, so that beats Quincy
Mariah
Jones.
Carey.
And a classical music conductor.
Beyonce?
Actually, Beyonce is the person I'm thinking of.
Really?
Is 32. Yeah. Hmm. And a classical music conductor, initials GS, has 31.
GS?
Yes.
Not George Giovanni. That's what came with my
George
mind.
Schulte?
Yes, George Schulte.
Good
actually
job.
Has 31.
With the Chicago Symphony Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. What was Michelle Obama's maiden name? She's been in the news lately.
Robinson.
Yeah. That is correct.
How do I know that?
From her book. You obviously listened to it.
Oh, I have not read
the book.
Because
her mama.
Oh, okay.
Mr.
and Mrs. Robinson's
Marion
kid.
Marion Robinson moved with them to the White House.
That's right.
And she always stuck up for Barack.
Mm-hmm.
He says.
Unfortunately, it was not planned to be so, but according to tradition, what was the last thing that John Lennon ate before he was assassinated?
A donut?
Well, it was at the studio where they were recording, so...
Salmon.
It wasn't salmon.
Steven!
I'll tell you what, though.
A Hostess Twinkie.
The drink was very, very English traditional.
Tea
and scones?
Tea.
A digestive.
And had a very, very Irish sandwich.
A scone. No, oh.
Corned beef?
Corned beef. Corned beef and a cup of tea is what it says here.
Yeah. Biscuit. That sounds
good.
I was going to say biscuit.
Oh, okay. Let's go back to, I'm looking specifically at Dan, not because you might know this, but because you recently said this person's name. A certain celebrity initially refused to appear on the cover of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's album cover. Well, who was that? The person you just mentioned a minute ago.
Lucille Ball?
Mae West.
Mae West.
Mae West, yeah. Who allegedly said, "What would I be doing in a Lonely Hearts Club?" She might have misunderstood the assignment there. She ultimately agreed, by the way, but only after the band wrote a letter that they all signed expressing their fandom.
Aww.
That's kind of cute to think of the Beatles as young people. According to Vice, this one hurt.
Vice.
This one really hurt. What are the top five darkest, most depressing rock songs of all time? This is going to make you laugh, but this is the best I can do. Listen to these years. 1994, 1991, 1992, 1993, and 1995.
Oh my God.
So they're all from the grunge era.
All before all Danielle.
You can get any one of them. I will
smells
say
like
this
Teen
is a win.
Spirit.
Well, there is a Nirvana song that's 1991. Mm-hmm. You have to think. The top five darkest, most depressing rock songs of all time.
Oh,
there's only one, I would say, on this list that is that had mainstream success. The rest are going to be kind of tough. Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's not a Taylor Swift song, right, Danielle?
No, Taylor Swift.
No, Taylor Swift was not
Maybe
big
you could
back
guess
then.
Some other bands that would have released during that time.
Smiths, Morrissey.
No.
Metal?
But they're not rock.
I mean, grunge is rock.
Nirvana,
I mean,
no, but I mean, the Smiths aren't grunge or rock.
Yeah,
this is
that's
like before
true.
Green
but
Day.
But they're depressing.
This is before Green
Day. No, they're
Day.
Not. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Don't.
So I've heard Nirvana. That's really all we've got besides the years so far, unfortunately.
We're doing great.
Yep, we're doing great. It's actually from Nevermind. It is a song from Nirvana's Nevermind.
Not Come As You Are.
Nope.
Mm-mm. That's actually...
That's a wonderful song.
Yeah.
That's a good song.
God, that was one show I never got
to. All right, this is the best I can do, folks. So Polly was the track from Nevermind. Soundgarden's Super Unknown. Okay. Let's see. Down in a Hole, Alice in Chains.
Yep.
Okay, all right.
And River of Deceit, Mad Season. So the one that I didn't list is a very, very famous and mainstream popular band, 1992. Their album was called 10, right? And the most popular song on this list starts with the letter J. It is a person's name.
Jeremy.
Oh, yes. Gosh.
Jeremy.
Yeah,
Jeremy.
That was a song
spoke
about...
in class today before he shot everybody.
I mean,
yes.
What?
Yep.
Oh my goodness.
It was about Columbine.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Wow.
That's right. Yep. And that was their most commercially successful track. I'd just like to point that out.
We were in Seattle at the height of the grunge era, and it just never, absolutely never really did anything for me.
It's okay.
But is
not
that kind of like how Detroiters don't necessarily like, you know, marvel at Motown like Europeans do?
Yeah, that, I understand the point you're making.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, but.
What is the longest gap between a movie's trailer and its final release? FYI, the average for most films is approximately 6 months.
2 years.
Oh, is it James Bond?
4 years.
That's not what it
says
here.
That last one that was pre-COVID, post-COVID?
Is it recent or older?
I mean, semi-recent. The film was released...
Lord of the Rings?
December 11th, 2009.
Oh. The film was released.
The film was released. And what we're trying to figure out is what's the space between
right.
them.
Does it have to do with the Harry Potter series?
Nope. However, it is a children's story. Ironically, it's a children's story.
Is that a Narnia thing?
Not Narnia.
Okay.
Nope. Very, very famous children's book that most Gen X folks know having read grown up, written by Maurice Sendak.
Where the Wild Things Are.
You great better book. Sit down for this. Post-trailer, it was 9 years and 2 days
before the movie was released.
The kid hit puberty.
What happened? Oh my goodness.
How did they have any material for the trailer?
So great.
They wouldn't have been producing anything.
The first trailer dropped, 9 December 2000. Jim Carrey's How the Grinch Stole Christmas film was released December 11th, 2009.
Oh my goodness.
That's just
Is it How the Grinch Stole Christmas or Where the Wild Things Are?
No, it was with the Grinch that the trailer dropped.
Oh, I see.
And then almost a decade later,
the
movie came out.
Because the VHSs used to have the trailers on them.
According to a popular knowledge, how many pairs of shoes does Whoopi Goldberg say she owns?
Is she along the lines of like Imelda Marcos?
Three.
It is not five.
No, 5,000?
Triple digit?
It's not triple digit. I mean, it's triple digits, not quadruple digits. Yes.
432.
That's a little high.
230.
I'm giving it to you. 288 is how many she says she owns. She must keep very close.
It's like two more than I have.
Yeah.
She may have numbered slots for them.
She has a great room for it.
So. Yes, she does. Exactly.
I do not have that many. And I like shoes.
I love shoes.
Shoes are nice.
They come in handy.
Shoes are useful.
Yeah.
What's the first feature-length, fully narrated, animated film? Probably know this already.
Snow White.
Yeah, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, 1937. Cost about $1.5 million to make. FYI, even with inflation, that's only $34 million today. Mm-hmm. It collected $184 million, or roughly $4 billion in release.
And probably still does.
Yes. Oh, my word. That's just absolutely incredible. I have to bring up, because we got sucked into that movie they made based on the graphic novel on Netflix. I won't say it here, but apparently it's the most expensive movie ever made. And it's over $350 million. And it was horrific. So here they are making something beautiful for, you know, $1.5
million. It can be done.
Well, and then, I mean, you had people drawing every frame of it.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, but those guys were getting paid peanuts.
Wicked is now streaming on Peacock, if you haven't, just in case. I mean, I know you've already seen it. But
the second part comes out later this year.
The first half of Wicked is now streaming.
Did anybody see the latest Snow White, though?
Oh, I heard it tanked.
Yeah, I know it did. But
not the one with Kristen Stewart, not the Snow White and the Huntsman.
No, this was Ziegler.
The live-action Snow White.
And what's-her-face, Gal
Gadot. Is,
she's amazing.
Yeah, she is.
Where is the 1995 model of the George Foreman lean, mean, fat-reducing grilling machine?
Smithsonian?
It's in the Smithsonian. Yeah.
Although it's been removed.
Yes, right next to the microwave and the crock pot.
Why has it been removed?
Well, they put it in a special place because he just passed. So they're giving him a little
bit. Well, I mean, when you think, you know, like, think about all the stuff they have at the Henry Ford. I mean, some of that stuff is, you know, brilliant. So, sort of.
What four U.S. cities top the, it says soda consumption. I'm going to scratch that out and
that's
say.
That's pop.
What Atlanta? Four U.S. cities top the pop consumption per capita list?
Pop
per capita
slash
list?
Soda, because maybe some of these places call it soda.
They should it's call possible. It pop. They should call it pop.
Atlanta, Fago. New York
Orlando?
City. Thinking like
I got do not have Orlando.
Okay.
Looking for cities?
Chicago?
City. Chicago is number two consuming pop.
New York City?
New York is not on the list.
Oh. This is per capita.
Per capita, top four U.S. cities. Chicago's number two.
Somewhere Baltimore. In Texas, so Dallas or Houston?
Oh, I'm giving it to you. Houston's number four.
Did you say Atlanta was on there?
Atlanta, yes, it is. I'm sorry. Atlanta's number three. But we have not hit number one.
Is it Detroit?
Louisville.
It is not Detroit.
Okay. So Orlando.
It's not Orlando, but pretty close and very highly populated.
Tampa?
Miami.
Miami?
Yes. Miami's number one.
I'm thinking warm weather.
What is the least pop consumptive city per capita in the United
States?
San
Francisco.
It is San Francisco. Absolutely. It's too much aluminum, too much glass. Seriously. They don't want all that waste.
Just too much carbonation.
Yeah, run it from the garden hose.
Too many bubbles.
Yep.
Yeah, too many bubbles.
Too many bubbles.
What is Eddie Van Halen's longest recorded guitar solo?
15 minutes.
I mean, that feels long.
12 minutes.
It's not. It's not even close
he
to that.
He certainly could shred, though.
I didn't come here to be judged.
It's way smaller, unfortunately.
Just kidding.
That was quite judgy, wasn't it?
So the track was titled Eruption, the second track of Van Halen's 1978 self-titled album. Eddie only soloed for a minute and 42 seconds.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Really?
I mean, that's a long time still.
You're talking to somebody
that
never played a guitar in his life.
I absolutely loathe Van Halen. Yeah. I loathe
it's a good album. It's a really, really good album.
David Lee Roth cannot sing. He never should have thought. They did
he
good
could stuff. But Jump had about the best orchestration. I used to use that to test out sound systems.
Oh, I love
that
it.
That was just
I love
what
it.
Song
it was just
did you
Jump.
Jump.
Jump for my love.
I mean, the video, I mean, I will, you know, for Ethel.
It's just great orchestration. Yeah. I mean, the sound in there was super.
Mm-hmm.
So, Beth, I take it Sammy Hagar didn't do you any favors either?
They did better. Sammy Hagar is a way better singer. He's a more talented singer than David Lee Roth. So I actually thought Van Halen was slightly better with them. David Lee Roth just really
didn't do it.
Professors, who are the only, we've had this before, it's a fairly well-known piece of trivia, the only three solo artists who hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 in three different decades. Only three people have done it.
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson's number one.
Neil Sedaka.
Cher.
Prince.
Madonna.
Really, really close to Michael Jackson.
Tito Jackson.
No.
Elvis Presley.
Janet Jackson.
Janet Jackson is number two. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, not Tito.
And a little more from the modern era.
It's Janet. We
have referred to the third person before as the new Madonna. So.
Katy Perry.
Mm-mm.
No.
Gotta be a little more
Taylor
serious.
Taylor Swift.
No,
it's not Taylor Swift. No.
Lady Gaga?
Lady Gaga is the third one.
Well,
yes, that's
right.
Not Debbie Gibson.
She would be the new Madonna because she totally plagiarized a song?
I mean, that's not the reason why, but some people have referred to Lady Gaga as the new
Madonna. Her
marketing
follows the same
Born That Way is pretty clearly Just express yourself.
It's true.
Or respect yourself. I can't remember the name of the Madonna
Express
song
yourself.
Now.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that's right. Who or what, oh, I love this question, just from the beginning, performed at the Super Bowl I halftime show?
The USC Marching Band.
No, but you're so close. It was the Grambling State Marching Band.
Oh, doggone it.
I believe you're talking about one of the very first Rose Bowls.
That's actually, okay. Mm-hmm.
How things have changed.
Yes. How things have changed.
Yeah. The
well, that would have been more entertaining than some I've seen.
Mm-hmm. Especially since the movie came out, according to the way we keep data now, what is the most streamed Bob Dylan song? We can track number of downloads.
Blow It in the Wind? Is
that no, but obvious? that would have been what I would have said. Yeah. But it's
no, but did he sing it or did he write it?
No, no.
Times they are changing?
No.
Wow.
I could really annoy Michael by doing this.
Knock.
Knocking on Heaven's Door?
Knocking on Heaven's Door. Okay, there we go. Well, yep.
No, seriously?
Yeah, that's what
now,
it says.
Now, does that also take into him writing, or did he have to sing it?
I don't know.
He wrote it with Michael Kamen, I think.
It's much better if he doesn't sing it.
Yeah, I know.
I haven't seen the film yet, so it must be featured.
Right.
Oh, is it in the Chalamet? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's available on Amazon now for rent.
It really is the best of all possible worlds. It's Dylan's music without Dylan singing it.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Hey.
A little of his voice goes a long way. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a better songwriter than he is.
It's like cayenne pepper.
Wonderful songwriter.
A pinch is all you need, and that's.
What was the longest running musical that ever was performed on Broadway?
Cats.
It's not what it
Phantom
says.
Phantom of the Opera.
Phantom of the Opera.
It's Phantom of the Opera. Oh. So that was 35 years.
Well, same song.
13,000.
That's right. It was February a year ago that it finally closed.
81 shows. It closed in late 2003. So yeah, that's
wow.
That's bananas.
You think they know the songs by now?
Mm-hmm. How many performers have done double duty, serving as both the host and musical guest of Saturday Night Live?
This is a great question. Ooh.
And all I have is a range, so we'll do a range.
25?
I mean, I feel like I have to give it to you, because all it says here is it's less than 50. It's sort of hard to get sort of a, you know.
That is less than 50.
Yes, 25 is less than 50.
Why would we answer like that?
I don't know, but that's the way it was given to me.
I was actually waiting for her to like list them all or something like that, right?
Yeah, I know. Right. Or the most recent.
Yeah.
Who was the inaugural musical guest on Saturday Night Live? Then, of course, just known as Saturday Night.
Oh, Paul Simon.
It's not what it says
no.
here. October 11th, 1975.
Oh,
Keyboard Authority.
Still crazy after all these years. Oh. He did that in a chicken suit.
Yeah.
I do remember that, but that wasn't the first episode.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're talking about the musical guest?
The musical guest, yes.
First musical
if you've seen
guest.
The movie, which, by the way, it is entertaining. The movie's called Saturday Night.
Yeah,
it talks about Lorne Michaels putting together the show.
Yeah.
It's actually really entertaining. And it's a beautiful song. It's one of my favorite songs, honestly. It is.
Is it Billy Joel? Something?
It is not Billy
Joel.
Is that
Joel. Huey Lewis?
No, not Huey Lewis. Yep.
Carly Simon had an appearance really early in that show, but
it's
not
male or female?
Male. Billy Preston's
Billy
band.
Preston.
And what was the song? It's such a great song.
Nothing from Nothing.
Nothing from Nothing.
He's nothing.
Yep, you got it. What was SNL musical guest for the show? The next show after 9/11, and what did she or he play?
Oh, who
was it? Bruce.
It was not. That's a good, very good guess. But I'll go back to where you just were a second ago, Professor Oljar.
Bob Dylan?
Oh. Carly Simon?
No, it was Paul Simon.
Oh,
it was actually
Simon.
Paul Simon.
Okay.
He did
not
a cold
senator.
Open with a Unplugged the Boxer. That's what he played.
Yeah.
It's absolutely brutal. Do not look it up. You'll never recover from
it. And you know,
depression.
I've heard him say that he didn't think he and Art did anything particularly extraordinary.
Sure.
I'm like, are you kidding? Really? Mm-hmm. You don't think any of those songs you did with Art Garfunkel were really great? I'm like, I think a lot of us thought
they were the voice
were
of a generation.
Awesome. Yeah.
Sheesh.
Graceland is a really good album.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, oh, yeah. It's not that his solo work isn't also great.
That was with Lady Smith Black Mambazo, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Who on March 22nd, 1986 became the first and so far only contemporary classical person to appear as an SNL musical guest?
Ooh.
Don't have to think too hard.
Pavarotti?
A brief crossover moment into the pop consciousness. I like the way that's phrased. That's nice. Initials PG.
Paul?
Nope.
Peter?
Nope.
Is that a flutist?
Parnassus?
I don't think so.
Bagpipes?
Paula.
No.
PG.
Peter.
You'll know
woman.
It when you hear it. It's
a
man.
Or,
it is a man.
It is a man.
It is a man.
How many Gallagher. First names start with P?
Paul Giamatti. No.
God, what have I done?
What have you done?
What have
you're
you done?
You're being unhelpful.
Parental
here.
Guidance. PG.
So we're running out of time. It was Philip Glass.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sort of surprised that...
does he really count as being a social?
We have just enough time to take this question here. According to Esquire, sure, who have been the top five best SNL hosts, however that gets mentioned, or measured, I should say?
Buck Henry.
Buck Henry is not on the list.
Are they kidding?
Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks
is number two.
Alec Baldwin.
What?
Taylor Swift.
Alec Baldwin is on the list. Swift is not on the list. Oh. I'm sorry. You've got Tom Hanks.
Amy Poehler. We've got
Tina Fey. Steve Martin is number one.
God, yes, mm-hmm. of course.
Yep.
Who can forget?
I'm trying to think who's in the five club.
That's right. So it's Martin, Hanks, blank, Baldwin is the top five.
Martin Short.
Tina Fey? Who talks like this. That's the best I can do.
Danny DeVito?
Nope.
Wait a minute. Talks like this? What, with the hands? What?
I can't do it again. I won't be able to do it. Absolutely. How about the dad from Roseanne's original sitcom?
John Goodman?
John Goodman is actually number four.
Mm-hmm. Really?
But Christopher Walken that I was trying to do. Is actually been the host. Yes.
Heather does a good impersonation of him.
Oh, all right. Well, we should be here.
Not on demand, though. Good Lord. No pressure. Jeez.
Also appearing on the list, Melissa McCarthy.
True.
Emma Stone. Adam Driver has done multiple times. And Ryan Gosling has actually been quite entertaining as well. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry that we have like one more really big question on the list, but we are out of time.
Wait till next year?
No,
we
the
have
summer.
To wait till next year to do this.
The summer.
Question.
The summer.
We just do it, and then Michael can edit out the other stuff.
Sure, let's do it. An appropriate finish. What was the last song played at Woodstock? Jimi Hendrix requested and was granted the final slot. Scheduled for midnight Sunday.
God Bless America?
Technical, logistical, and weather delays.
Star Spangled Banner?
Pushed the closing day way off schedule. Hendrix finally hits the stage at 9 a.m. the next day closed his set in front of the remaining 40,000 fans with his iconic cover of...
Star Spangled Banner.
The Star Spangled Banner. And finally after that, Hey Joe. That's how it finished. A 9-hour delay? Oh my God.
They had rain and the threat of electrocution to deal with.
That's exactly right.
Sounds like Marie Sendak.
Steven was at Woodstock.
Oh, I see.
You want to touch it?
How interesting.
Don't ask me if I remember Star Spangled Banner or Hey Joe.
Yeah, were you peeing in a bucket?
It was Monday morning.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry, professors. The time has come. Just one more time for this season to say goodbye, Heather.
Bye-bye.
Steven.
Goodbye.
Dave.
See ya.
Jim.
Goodbye.
Dan.
Goodbye.
Beth.
Goodbye.
And Danielle.
One term down, 58 to go.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.